Welcome to Right Spokane Perspective with your host, Tim.
And Shannon.
It's opinion, fact, information, and your alert system. Stay tuned and enjoy the show. And welcome to Right Spokane Perspective. On this Monday episode, we're going to be talking about our children, their future, education in Washington. We're talking about candidates for OSPI. Today, our candidate is David Olson, and we're going to jump into a conversation with him about education in public schools after inspiration.
Our inspiration today is community in Christ. I knew that the only way to succeed was to forget about home and my wife, son, and daughter, said Jordan. I found that I can't do that. They're woven into the fabric of my heart and soul. Alone in a remote area, Jordan was participating in a reality show where contestants were asked to survive outdoors with minimal supplies for as long as possible. What forced him to forfeit was not the grizzly bears, freezing temperatures, injury, or hunger, but an overwhelming loneliness and desire to be with his family. We might have all the survival skills necessary for the wilderness, but separating ourselves from community is a sure way to fail. The wise author of Ecclesiastes said two are better than one because one can help the other up. Christ honoring community, even with all of its messiness, is essential for our thriving. We don't stand a chance against the trials of this world if we try to tackle them on our own. Someone who toils alone toils in vain. Without community, we're more susceptible to danger. Unlike a single thread, a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. The gift of a loving, Christ-focused community is one that not only provides encouragement, but also gives us strength to thrive despite challenging situations. We need each other. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the gift of community. Please open our hearts to love and spend more time with others today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Well, those are sentiments that you will not hear in a public school because the community of public school doesn't allow religion, but it seems like some of the ideologies we're allowing into public schools have become religions, or at least very important in the public education realm. And children seem to be suffering and not having great outcomes because of all the political things that are being pushed into the schools. But the schools are guided by elected officials, and the official that is at the state level is OSPI, Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, and that is a statewide election coming up this year. And our candidate today for OSPI is David Olson, and I'd like to just invite you on the show and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me today.
So the first question out the gate is, you know, who is David Olson? What have you done with your life? You know, introduce yourself to the listeners of who you are and your past.
Well, my name is David Olson, and I grew up in the state of Texas in a small little town called Cut and Shoot, C-U-T, little N, and then S-H-O-O-T. And we were immortalized on the Hee Haw Show back in the day for having such a unique population of 301. I went to the military right out of high school, and a few years after I'd been in, I was trained as an electrician, and I saw some guys walking around, and they were tan and had some fish and lobster in a bag, and I asked what they did, and they were Navy divers. So I became a Navy diver and became an underwater welder, hard hat diver, and that was an early introduction for me to the skilled trades, being an electrician, welder, and underwater welder and diver. So I had the fortune to be able to be in the Navy for 28 years, went in as enlisted, promoted up over the course of my career, and got out as a chief warrant officer, but had the opportunity to live in Korea, Italy, Guam, Hawaii, Puerto Rico. So I got to see some unique cultures across the world, both not necessarily as good as ours and some that are pretty good. But I'm married. I've been married for a long time. I have four children and one grandchild. After I retired from the Navy, we settled here over in Gig Harbor, Washington, and I was a defense contractor for a while, and I'm currently a banker. In 2013, I was concerned about some of the things in our school district, mostly facility related, about the age of the buildings and the condition. So I started attending school board meetings, and 2013 I got elected for the first time to the Peninsula School District, and rewarded by my constituents to be reelected numerous times. And so I'm now in my 11th year on the school board. And I also was elected in 2015 to serve as a charter review commissioner. So run for office about five times and won my election. So that's about me. As a school board member, I've been very fortunate to work with other school directors around the state to make some really effective changes across the state in education. And
well, and that is one of the big problems that a lot of folks see in education is that we think we elect a school board and the decisions for the children in our neighborhood, our community, as the inspiration was laid out, you got to have that community and that meaning. And we think that it's those people that are choosing how our children are taught. But really, we have kind of a heavy hand at the state level through the office that you're running for superintendent of public instruction. And we've seen those statewide mandates, especially I think a lot of people learned how heavy-handed our state government through SPI was because of COVID.
Correct. COVID definitely uncovered some, scary for some people said it was scary, but it definitely opened some eyes on materials that were being taught, and not just the materials, but how the materials were being taught. Once the young students were sitting side by side with their parents on their Zoom calls and the parents could see what was going on. So it was.
Yeah, I think that was a big eye opener for a lot of folks is that they learned what their children were not learning, but they also learned what their children were learning. And so I think that was important to open people's eyes to what we're actually funding with our public dollars for public schools. But also there was that heavy hand of, you know, forcing children to not be in school, even if there was no real COVID issue in that specific school or school district. It was not a local level decision. It was all state mandated. And now we're seeing that curriculums and many things are done that way. And so the local school boards do have to team up to try to push back against state policies, especially the unfunded mandates. Is that right?
I would agree with that. And I think that we've seen some sea change in that area since COVID, that more and more school board across the state are electing, or school, I guess I would say communities are electing more conservative school board members across the state to try and counter that push by the state into the classrooms and try and, I made a comment yesterday at the King County Convention that the government doesn't own your kids. They don't own your grandkids. And the schools are not co-parents of our kids, but the state legislature, governor, and current superintendent of schools seem hyper-focused on pushing their radical agenda into the schools, whether the parents want them there or not.
Well, and in the state of Washington, you know, if you're not affirming your child's pronouns or something, you know, it could be child abuse. So sending your children to school these days can be a pretty scary thing, because once you sign the child into the school and they're registered, there's areas of life where the schools actually have more power than the parents do now. And so I can see why some of those individuals in the education system feel they have more power than the parents.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that's why the six initiatives that passed to try and take back some control in our schools and across our state, some of the things that were being passed at the legislature were just pretty over the top. And I think the citizens in signing and getting those issues on the ballot was really an important moment for our state to send a message that people in this state are tired of it, not just with education, but other areas as well.
Well, I think the one having to do with children and parental notification, I believe, is the initiative. I don't think the legislature passed that one. I think that one is still coming to the ballot. If I'm wrong, I don't know. I'd have to double check that. But I do think parents are more interested in having local government, local school districts having the authority on what's in the curriculum, how, you know, employee issues are handled as far as teachers and how they operate in the classroom, because obviously people can't go over to Olympia and confront bureaucrats when they're having trouble in their local schools. So you're running for OSPI that would be, you know, this this office that has power over education. It has a lot of policy around how education is funded. What would your modus of operandi be? How would you operate as the superintendent of public schools?
Well, the first thing I would say is that I would give back local control to the 295 school boards across the state that current superintendent Chris Reichdahl has done its best to take away the power of the local school boards to run their school districts as they see fit.
But he has run the schools, I think, with a very dictatorial, firm hand.
Yes, he has. It's sort of the Reichdahl way or the highway. And it's regarding, he did the same thing during COVID around the mask. If school districts and school boards decided they didn't want to wear the mask, you say, if you don't do it, I'm going to take all your funding away. He's done it with parent voice. He's doing it more and more, trying to push more into the classroom further, that if school boards and school districts fail to implement his policies or do what he wants, he's threatening to do that again now.
Yeah. Well, with vaccines and school-based health clinics.
Correct. Yeah. And for me, the first thing I would do is I would work with the state government to end that policy. And, you know, if the voters bring in a Republican governor, bring in me as OSPI, I think we'd be able to work to put a stop to some of these horrible policies that are happening right now, which, in my opinion, a lot of the teachers I've talked to don't want to be teaching this stuff. They feel, I mean, pressured by the unions to teach these subjects. And oftentimes a teacher would call out sick because they just weren't comfortable teaching some of these classes, and then a substitute teacher would have to come in and do it. But for me, that my long way to get around your question or answer your question was, first thing I would do is restore local controls to the board, to the school boards, to let them make local decisions based on what they feel is best for their schools. That'd be number one. And then I would bring in trusted advisors to take a look at all the various entities that fall under OSPI and determine how best to bring them more to a focus of, let's help the kids learn and let's focus on teaching the kids to be educated and not worry about pushing controversial agendas onto the students and the parents.
Well, I think that's important, especially when we have students that are falling behind. I think Washington is in rough shape when we're talking about how students are prepared by the time they graduate, leaving public schools when it comes to reading, arithmetic, you know, basic education issues. They don't know history, they don't know civics, but, you know, they know a laundry list of other things that are pretty meaningless in the scheme of life. And also there's tons of confusion around issues of racial equity and diversity and inclusion and all this stuff, that children really just need the foundations of education so they can thrive in life. And all those other things are, you know, social issues that really shouldn't be a function of education. And I think a lot of parents had their eyes open, like we had talked about, because of COVID. And now we've seen, you know, you see it all over the internet, videos of parents going to school board meetings, trying to review curriculum, and they are censored because the curriculum is not appropriate for the school board meeting. So I think it shouldn't be in the classroom. Most parents probably feel that way. So we're going to take a break. We're going to be right back with David Olson. We're going to be talking more about public schools. And here locally, we spend about $20,000 per student. Should be enough to educate a child. So we'll talk about how that money is getting spent here statewide after the break. Don't go anywhere. Thank you for listening to Right Spokane Perspective. We are only on the air and podcast because you support this program. You, the listeners, we are listener supported. Keep us on the air to keep all these interviews and shows going. Please go to rightspokaneperspective.com. There's a donate button there. Or you can send your donation to Right Spokane Perspective, LLC, P.O. Box 7620-99207. Thanks, and back to the show. And welcome back to Right Spokane Perspective. On this Monday episode, we're talking about children, their future, and if we're getting them an education or just a whole lot of confusion. And we ran off into the break talking about curriculum and how parents are pretty upset. People are going to school boards and wanting to bring up pieces of curriculum to school board members, and they're saying, hey, this isn't appropriate for public consumption, but it's okay in the public schools. And of course, we've talked about how graphic the sex education is in the schools on this show before, but now it's littered throughout many curriculums in public schools, which is why we've got a huge exodus from public schools here in Washington State. So we've got David Olson again on with us today, running for OSPI, that's Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, for a statewide office. He'll be on the ballot this year. So welcome back, David. Let's talk about curriculum and the confusion in the classroom. I've got a history of working with children and, race, diversity, inclusion. They call it DEI. I call it DIE because it's how all civilizations die when we start attacking each other or labeling each other based upon the color of our skin or how tall we are or whatever metrics they want to use. And we're confusing students and telling some students they're victims and others that they are victimizers. What's your thought on that in the public school system?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. And just to follow up on that comment you made just before the break about curriculum, our school district, where I'm currently the vice president of the Peninsula School District, we have all of our curriculum posted on our website, every class, every subject. We have it 100% transparent on our website.
Well, that's pretty good. Our school district here, you have to make an appointment and go to the administrative building downtown to view the curriculum. And it seems like they put lots of blockades in the way, is what I've heard from parents and some people that wanted to view curriculum.
That would be a thing as superintendent of public instruction that I would also, if it was within my power, I would make it mandatory that all curriculums be posted on the websites, because I think parents and family members should have the opportunity to easily see what their children and grandchildren are learning in schools. And there should be no reason why a school district would withhold that information from the parents. And so I would definitely try to move to make that mandatory. We've got great success. Parents appreciate that we have it on our website so that they can see it. And if they want to opt their student out of something, they have plenty of time to do it. In 2021, as board president, the Peninsula School District that I'm on banned the critical race theory, and we're the first in the state to do that. And we specifically, to your point, have a statement in there that says, we will not allow the teaching of any subject in our school district that teaches children that they either are oppressors or victims. We were very clear in that language that we did not want that part of our school district. And we were very proud to be the first in the state to ban that kind of stuff in our schools. And we're not teaching that today. And if someone comes to us and says, hey, we heard this or heard that, we're pretty quick to jump on it to make sure that no one is trying to skirt the resolution that we passed in 2021.
Well, that's good to hear that there is a Washington school district that has stood up and found leeway in the law to do that, because there are pushes from the state level and the legislature here in Washington to force radical ideologies and curriculum that is really more about social issues. And to me, I look at our local school district here, $20,000 per student. And, statewide, we have, 67% of the students regularly attending. We have, some failure rates across the board. Half the students don't read at grade level when they graduate. And it seems like the education industrial complex is like a self-licking ice cream cone, because there's still money getting spent on these K-12 students when we're talking about community college and all the remedial courses. I remember I went to community college, and a lot of the people that were there had already been there for a year or 2 years in remedial courses when I was starting in those 101 classes. So it costs us money over and over. It's not just the K-12 spending. It costs us money into the future when we don't create successfully educated students. So what are your thoughts about our, test scores, if you will, or the grade for public education in Washington?
Yeah, well, it's abysmal, and it's unfortunate. And the school districts that have high net worth individuals living there, like Bellevue, Issaquah, Seattle, who have the Microsofts, the Amazons, are really rich commercial properties that they can afford to pass really high operational levies and their taxes will go up just a cent or two, where the smaller school districts across the state, more rural, higher poverty school districts, can't pass those kind of levies because their taxes would go up $8 or $10 a thousand. So it just doesn't, it's, they're not getting passed because the voters just can't afford to pay those kind of taxes. But the benefit of being able to pass those levies is they get to replace their outdated curriculum with more current curriculum. They can send their teachers to professional development to teach the new curriculum. And so a lot of times the average across the state is about 50% of the students can read and write and do math on average, but that's offset by those high net worth school districts that are getting like 70 or 80 can read. But when you have smaller school districts, and I don't want to name them out because I don't want to put them on the spot, but they're easy to find on the OSPI website. You have school districts that 20 to 30% of their kids can read at grade level, and even less than that do math. My school district did a strategic plan where we have everything we do is focused on having 100% of our children read and write by the end of third grade, be able to pass their math scores. All of our school improvement plans are focused on the school board strategic plan. And we are laser focused on making sure all our kids can read and write at grade level, do math and science. And I would, as OSPI, I would encourage school districts to be more stand up, as you use the term, stand up, stop being afraid of OSPI, and, you know, take local control, bring in the curriculum you need. Chris Reichdahl, it's his way or the highway. For me, it would be, how can I support you? So if a school board came to me and said, here's where we're having a problem, instead of saying, too bad, it's my way or the highway, I would say, how can I help you be successful with your children? And so I think I would completely flip the narrative and do my very best to start helping school districts, especially struggling ones, rather than pushing back against them and making them feel isolated.
Well, and there's tons of money in our state government in education, and it's so much so that Chris Reichdahl and Jay Inslee, the legislature, decided to fund schools at pre-COVID numbers because a lot of people saw what was going on in public schools, and tens of thousands, I think it's over 50, 70,000, there's tens of thousands of children left the public school system since COVID because the parents' eyes were open to what was going on in the classrooms and with public education. And we had the McCleary decision not that long ago. Parents and the community realizes we're spending more than we've ever spent in history. I mean, you can look at inflation, you can look at any data you want. We're still spending more than we've ever spent in history on education, getting less results. And to the point where, like the McCleary decision, the spending on education is not supposed to be so localized like you were talking about with levies. But also there's the bond issue. Here locally, we saw a lot of the bonds fail, and I believe it's because we're building these like monoliths, where these are castles, and the schools are way more extravagant than they need to be. And so voters are seeing this, you know, $90 million price tag for a middle school and seeing what's being built, but not seeing the educational outcomes. So what are your thoughts on education spending in those areas?
Well, I agree. And I think some of those Taj Mahals you're talking about are built in those high net worth school districts. I think in our school district, we were fortunate enough to, after 30 years of not passing a bond, we were able to pass one and build some new elementary schools. But we wanted them to be efficient and to be useful, but we certainly didn't have waterfalls and atriums and things like some of these school districts have, which are might look nice, but they sure don't aid in the education of our children. And I think that's really unfortunate that, you know, that in the bond, the state should do more to help small school districts, rural school districts with their capital funding. But unfortunately, the state government, specifically Democrats, have focused more of their opportunity on, like you said, more controversial issues. And back in the day, what, 20, 30 years ago, they said the lottery money was going to all go to education. That was a joke. None of that money went to education. They said the same thing with the marijuana revenue. That didn't go to education. And then they were proposing capital gains taxes and know that all that money would go to education. And I know that's a lie. That's not going to happen. And so the funding needs to be in the classroom. I support school choice. And the only way that is going to happen is if we have a change at the top. We need to bring in a Republican governor, bring me in for OSPI, and let us start working to make that change at the top and get that school choice on the ballot so that parents across the state have a say in that, and not just these people in the legislature. But I think that should be on the ballot.
For school choice. Well, and I think that's part of the problem we have with some of these systems is that there's no competition, and we've only got a few minutes left. So folks, if you want to know more about David Olson, go to electdavidolson.com. There's a contact tab there if you want to contact him for information about his campaign. Again, that's Elect David Olson, OLSON, davidolson.com. So it comes to school-based health clinics. I know that that's a concern for a lot of parents because of the passage of House Bill 1599 a couple years ago, taking basically medical control of their children away from the parents, and it puts it in the schools. So, David, what is your thoughts on the school-based health clinics and what they call reproductive health being done in the public schools at these places?
Yeah, I would have to say I'm 100% against that, and that's why majority of the others that are running for this position are much more progressive than me. I would absolutely do my very best to prevent health clinics or centers being put into our public schools. I think it would be horrible for parents to send their kids to school and have their kids having treatments or procedures being done at the schools without their knowledge. And this would be all parents. I think it's scary that the state is trying to move towards that. And I would be 100% opposed to medical centers in our public schools.
Well, thank you very much for that answer, because that is something that a lot of parents are very concerned with. Just kind of one last question, if we can get it all wrapped up in the next couple of minutes, because I wanted to go into like educational service districts, and there's just so many layered parts of the public school system that has really priced itself out of sanity, in my view, and it's not really helping the children. But there's other political candidates out there, and I know that this is a statewide run. There is going to be a primary coming up in August, and you have some opponents, probably Democrat and Republican. So how do you kind of distinguish yourself for the voters with those opponents?
Well, there's definitely some liberal opponents in there that are running that I don't think any of the listeners on this show would vote for, just because it would just be more the same. There are two other candidates in the race that are running on a conservative message. One of them is Brad Klippert, who's very conservative, very nice guy, Christian guy, but he's known for not liking the campaign. He's been in the race for 9 months and has raised less than $5,000. The other candidate in the race that was elected as a state rep, I don't know, eight years ago or so, served two terms as a Republican in the state House, is running as a conservative. But his media at a conference 6 weeks ago, his campaign media on the table said that he was socially progressive, which we have a progressive in OSPI right now. This gentleman's name is Chad Magendoz. But, he claimed that he's socially progressive, and I'm absolutely not socially progressive. And I'm definitely a strong Christian. I would ask your voters, your listeners, to do their due diligence. And if any of them want to reach out to me, they can certainly contact me via my email, and I'd be happy to talk to them more about the differences between the candidates.
Okay, again, that email is going to be at the website, electdavidolson.com. I want to thank you for your time today, and wish you good luck in the campaign. All that being said, we'll be with you folks again tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Right Spokane Perspective. We are sponsored by Right Spokane Perspective, LLC, and made possible by advertisers you hear and contributions from listeners like you.